is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Brock, I told the people a secret about a half hour ago that I think I'll be willing to share with you in 30 minutes. I think I'll be willing. Let's see where things go over the next half hour, but I think I'd be willing to, I'll be willing to share with you in 30 minutes.
I think we should be gentle and soft right now with Brock. He didn't get his birthday wish, and I just want to make sure that he's doing okay.
How are you doing, man?
I thought in that ninth inning, too, he hit one deep to right field. I'm like, there it is. You're going to make me wait a little bit, but that's okay. I'm a patient guy, kind of like you when it comes to eating good food. Salk, you always save the best for last.
Patience is the first thing we all think of when we think of
Salk.
Brock.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is a delayed gratification guy, right? Isn't that what you say about yourself?
I do like delayed gratification.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Delayed gratification, guys. Yeah. I'm like,
the longer you wait, the better something is.
Sure, I didn't want Julio to hit a home run in the first. I didn't want to be Polanco. I didn't want my phone to blow up. Like, look at you, you Mike Blowers, prognosticator. No, I didn't want any of that. I was a delayed gratification. And when he flew that one to right field, I'm like, there it is. I had a little smile on my face. Oh, like,
here it goes. So it's kind of a disappointing birthday for you then, huh?
No, it was an amazing birthday. Amazing birthday. So many people to chat with yesterday.
Did you figure out who sent you that note?
Nope. Still didn't figure that out. Didn't get to that. I'll get to that eventually. Okay. I think maybe the next time they text from that area code, I'll get to that. I went and picked up, and didn't tell you guys this yesterday on the show, at least. I have been always wanting to get half a beef, half a cow.
Half a cow.
Or even a full cow. But, now with less in the household, really only three under the roof, a full one probably doesn't make a lot of sense. So I finally did it. Finally went in with one of my buddies and got half a cow and picked it up yesterday, and it looks unbelievable. Unbelievable. So we'll dig into that. And then I got home and got to watch the game. And yeah, man, that was a birthday bash. It was nice to see them do exactly what you wanted to see them do, Salk. That's walk and hit home runs. Pretty simple recipe. You get on base, you get a little bit of traffic, you get that pitcher a little nervous, and then you see it go over the fence. With this pitching staff, you give yourself a chance to win each and every night. I bet you we will look at the end of this season in games they hit a home run, just a single home run. In games they hit a single home run, if 54% of the time a runner gets on and you score, I'm going to guess they hit a home run, they're going to win 75%+ of their games. Just one. Just hit one. And you're going to give yourself a chance to win with the way that you can throw the ball.
I was thinking more about out-homering your opponent. In games where you out-homer your opponent, I would be willing to bet you've got a near-perfect record. It is such a crucial part of today's games with pitching just being as good as it is. And it's really, really, really good. Montas struggled a little bit. Credit to them. They laid off some tough pitches. Mm-hmm. He also gave them a little bit. He was not sharp last night, and that happens. But great. When he's not sharp early, because oftentimes good pitchers are not sharp in the first inning, what do you have to do? Yep. You got to make him pay for it. And they did. Score three early. Tack on a few more later. Tack on a few more after that. The more runs you can score against Buck Hunter, whatever that guy's, Buck Farmer, whatever it is, that's a good thing. That guy's name is Buck Farmer. That's the greatest name I've ever heard for a pitcher. Tell me more. Can we find out more about Buck Farmer? I'm fascinated by this Reds team. Like,
you think
in
that's
general.
His God-given name?
I hope
Buck
so.
Farmer.
I can only hope.
His name is George.
What?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah.
His name's not Buck?
George Rooney Buck.
Oh, that's disappointing. Yeah. I was hoping his given name was Buck. Buck Farmer.
Where was he born? Was he born out there in Kentucky? Was he born?
Georgia.
Okay.
But he went to Rockdale County High School, which sounds pretty sweet.
I bet he did. I bet that was a place, too. Look, that Reds team is interesting, and you needed to do last night. You get them on base, they're trouble. Spencer Steer's pretty good player. Obviously, Ellie De La Cruz is all world.
Lightning in a ball.
Oh, my gosh. How about the ball? It's a few things. Just a moment on De La Cruz, because mostly this is about the Mariners, but just a moment on De La Cruz, because he's a freak. How about the ball he hit to shortstop that he just nearly – it was just a routine ground ball to short.
Yes.
And he was half a step away from beating it out?
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
Because it comes with...
He had an inside the park home run in 15 seconds a week ago.
It's absurd. Yep. He really is fast. The ball he tracked down that could have been Jonathan Classe's first hit. Ridiculous play that he made out there in short left field. He is some kind of special and fun.
I mean, he really is Usain Bolt playing baseball. Because he's like 6'5" and he's got that same stride. And like if Usain Bolt, I mean, Usain would be obviously the fastest human ever lived. So he'd be a beat or two faster, but not much, not swinging a bat and getting out of the box at the at just the rate that he does. And you know, those fielders and JP in that case were like, try not to rush it, try not to rush it, try not to rush it, but you're just going to humanly rush it.
Well, you don't have a choice.
No.
Because you look up and he's halfway down the line.
Correct.
Yeah, it's funny. You don't get credit. I always, this is a small thing that drives me nuts in baseball. You don't get credit for on-base percentage on an error. And I think you should. And I first developed this theory in like 2007 when Jacoby Ellsbury first came up. I don't know if you guys remember much of Jacoby Ellsbury, the pride of Madras, Oregon. But Jacoby was real fast. And when he came up, that speed caught, same type of thing, just caught everybody by surprise. And I watched 3-4 different plays where he reached on an error, but he caused the error.
Sure.
The guy looked up, realized he didn't have enough time, and then made an errant throw because he knew who was running. And I always thought it was kind of lame that he didn't get credit for that because he caused the error.
Yeah.
So De La Cruz is going to do that as well. They did a great job of keeping them off the bases last night, not letting that machine kind of get wound up and working, and then playing your own game offensively. So
is that the fourth quality start in a row? We were talking about these quality starts, kind of looking up. Kind
eight
looking
on the season, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know Hancock had, I know all three of the series in the series before, and that being the fourth. So, yeah, pretty, and maybe five in a row.
It
maybe
might be Logan. Five in a row because Logan had one, I believe. Yeah, so, closed, yeah, I think that might be five, like a full trip through the rotation with all quality starts. And that's the, the formula.
Mm-hmm.
Quality starts from your pitching staff, which you're getting now. You need J.P. Crawford to get on base, and you need Julio to be Julio.
Mm-hmm. And they did just one time. I think both those guys got on base one time yesterday, and that one time was good enough to set up Jorge Polanco's three-run blast. I was thinking about Polanco. Does he have the most focused eyes that you have seen from a Mariner? Do you notice how like his eyes are really open? Like he is really on to. Have you noticed that little detail?
No.
Okay. Well, you will tonight. Just take a look at the way. It's like he's got little mini toothpicks in his eyes.
Interesting.
Like he is hyper focused in a super positive way. That is no way demeaning, but he is like locked in. Hmm. And nice to see him warm up. Nice to see Mitch stay hot. You know, this is not a 6-10 baseball club, and this is a club that needs to win this series. And now you've set yourself up, right? You've won the first game against the Cubs.
Yep.
Came up a little short, stubbed your toe, especially in the finale. Couldn't get it. You, like, win this series. Got to win series. You want to get this thing going this season in 2024, find a way. I'm not asking you to sweep this series, but just go win one of these next two so you can put a win on that side of the column of winning series, because the more you do that in this league, the more opportunity you give yourself to be relevant in September.
Well, if they can do some of the things they did last night, they'll make that happen. If you're able to keep the Reds off the bases, no walks again last night, that's three straight games without a walk for the Mariner pitching staff. That's remarkable. That's awesome. In this day and age. I mean, it's incredible. And when we talk about controlling the zone and all the problems they've had doing it offensively, that's how you do it defensively or pitching-wise. That was tremendous. Yep. Keep this team off the bases because they can run. Second, take your walks when they're available. And they did it last night. And you see, what did Montas throw, 45 pitches in the first inning?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you do that, you set yourself up for success in any number of ways. So they took their walks. They hit their home runs when the guy made a mistake. And once his arm got tired and he thrown a bunch of pitches. And that's how you win baseball games.
And look up, your defense starting to also warm up a little bit. Polanco makes a tremendous play. Julio's running play down. If you took a look, I think it was Shear, one of their players, that hit that line drive in the gap. And we talk about this. Steer. It's not just the home runs that can be a challenge.
Right.
It's those line drives in the gap. And when you got Julio running the way he can, you could see it in Steer's face. Like, are you serious?
Well, and then you put Class A in left field and a little bit more speed there. And then you put Raley in right instead of Haniger, and it's a little bit more speed there. Right. All of a sudden, your defense does not look quite as problematic as it did a few days ago. So, look, it's just one game. Again, just like all the losses don't mean that they're going to be bad moving forward. The wins certainly don't mean that they're going to be good. But as I said yesterday, I just wanted to see the way it was supposed to look.
Mm-hmm.
And finally yesterday we got a chance to see that. Here's what it's supposed to look like for the first time all year.
Yeah.
Nearly 3 weeks.
Yep.
finally, you get an opportunity to see the design play its way out, and hopefully there's a lot more where that came
way
from.
Way to go, Brant. Way to go. On my birthday, my buddy. There you go. My comedic buddy, Brant Brown, offense coordinator, called a hell of a game last night. Really
what
proud
they needed
of
him to do.
Yes.
All right, coming up next, Brock, I'm really excited about a familiar name coming to Seattle. Mentioned her earlier, and we'll talk a little bit more about her next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, salesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Stop the presses, Brock. It's not a drill. The Mariners scored 9 runs in 1 game last night, and it didn't take too long. Walk to start the game from JP. Walk to keep it going from Julio. Jorge Polanco, see you later.
Runners, their leads, and now the 3-1 pitch to Polanco. Swinging a drive, deep to right field. Fraley going back, looking up. Goodbye, baseball. Line shot, home run. Jorge Polanco.
Yep, that was a big one. Mitch Haniger would add a home run later. Jonathan Classe got his first hit and turned out to be a big one as well.
The 1-2. Swinging a ground ball with some eyes through the left side for a base hit. Ty France scores from third. Jonathan Classe in his first big league game picks up his first major league hit.
And an RBI to go with it. That was really nice to see. Look, they did pretty much everything right last night, but at the center of all of it, we'll get to Kirby in a moment, was Polanco, who made a really nice play at second base, who hit that big home run to get them going. Scott Servais, pretty impressed with these veteran second basemen.
Things will settle. This guy has a track record. You know what I mean? He's not going to strike out that much. He's too good a player. He's too good a hitter. He recognizes pitches. He's got a ton of experience in the league. He's seen splits and sliders and curves and changes. He's seen it all before. So it is going to come back to the norm with a player like that. And I just love how professional he is. And we knew that when we acquired him. This is a man of very few words, but he leads, truly does lead by example. He shows up every day, gives you great effort pregame. He gives you, you know, a quality at bat. All the time, he works through it, so eventually those strikeouts are going to start to go away, and he also can hit the ball over the fence, and that's pretty valuable in this game.
Yeah, sure is, and that was 109 miles an hour off that bat that he turned on last night. It was a professional effort all the way around. We talked yesterday, I think one of our callers, when we opened up the phone line, just said, man, situational hitting has been such a bugaboo for this team for some time. And last night, 14 opportunities, 5 of 14, over 333 average in that situation. My buddy Luke Arkins was listening to the show yesterday, as he normally does, and feeds me some great intel. He loves those next-level stats. He said the problem and the challenge is, yeah, they're about 24th, 25th with runners in scoring position, but they were 29th in opportunities with runners in scoring position. Right. They've just not been giving themselves enough opportunities. They did last night, and they capitalized.
Yeah, they certainly did. And then on the other side, you know, do what you got to do. This team has to pitch in order to win, and they did it yesterday. Kirby was phenomenal. I thought his curveball was excellent.
Moves.
Right?
Was like, Dad, look at this.
Right?
I'm so proud of him. On my birthday, rewinding with a controller. Like, look at this.
No.
Let me rewind this back for you, Dad. Look at the amount of movement as that curveball landed in the lower right quadrant time and again.
Yeah, he was pretty good. Texas wins as well, so Mariners stay 2 games back. They have another against the Reds tonight. Logan Gilbert will take the ball against Hunter Green.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
That's a nice thing. John Ryan, former Seahawks punter, is going to come in and sign a 1-day contract to retire a Seahawk. I like that. It's good for him.
Yep. He was fun.
He was fun. He's just one of those beloved people here. Yes. That I like when things like that happen, when there's just a connection between a, you know, random punter and and a city like Seattle. So good on John Ryan. Sounds like Cooper DeJean, Brock, was in for a little visit. That's a guy that I know you like. Profiled already. If they draft him in the first round, I'm going to be furious. And G. Scott, because he's all defensive back. G. Scott report. How about a report from G. Scott?
Really?
He says George Halani, running back, Boise State, will visit the Seahawks today.
Oh, interesting. Way to go, G.
Way to be a little scoopage.
Way to be a little Schefter news breaker.
Look
at you.
A little scoopage.
Getting a step on Adam Schefter breaking that kind of news. And then, you know, maybe the biggest report, and I'll hit on this in Blue 88, Salk, is, man, these Seahawks with a new regime and new faces. We heard from a bunch of players last week. We're going to hear from 3 more players tomorrow, kind of opening up and even sharing some data with us. The fastest Seahawk thus far, the fastest Seahawk, and I can confirm
that is true.
I can confirm that that is a true report. That is no cap on that report. Those are facts.
Okay.
That Geno Smith has topped out on the old GPS machine. That old catapult system is the fastest Seahawk yet.
I don't even really know what to make
at
of that.
OTA.
I don't know if that's a great thing for Geno or a sad thing for the rest of the team.
Was it 22? I'll hit
21,
on 21,
I believe. But yeah, why don't you take us through that a little bit later?
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, sometimes you get surprise moments in sports. This was not one of them.
With the first pick in the 2024 WNBA draft, the Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark, University of Iowa.
They went over to them. They selected Caitlin Clark with the number one pick in the draft. Congratulations to Indiana and all of their fans. They are getting the ultimate gift as Caitlin Clark is on her way there. But with the 14th pick in the draft, the Seattle Storm selected a name that I actually knew, Nika Mühl, who played some pretty incredible defense on Caitlin Clark in the semifinal, the final four round of the tournament this year.
Yes,
and
she did.
Kind of excited about her. Here she is talking to Holly Rowe. She's from Croatia originally. Here she is talking to Holly Rowe after she was drafted.
Nika, I know that your sister Hanna is here with you tonight, but the rest of your family are all at home in Croatia watching. What would you love to say to them right now?
I feel like I was lucky enough and have had the privilege to have amazing people around me, my sister, my family, all the people watching from home, the people at my table, the people in the audience. That's my family from life. I want to give a message to all my people in Croatia watching. Volim vas puno, šaljem vam sto pusa, i jedva čekam da vas vidim.
That's exactly right. I couldn't have said it better myself, Brock.
Very,
how about
very,
that?
Very, very dear. Something.
Yes.
Yes. And you're going to get a chance to watch her once again.
Absolutely.
Defend Caitlin Clark when the Fever come to town.
Yep.
Shout out to Gonzaga as well. We know we've got some Zeg fans over on the other side of the mountains that listen to us. A couple Gonzaga players drafted, including Gig Harbor's finest right before Nika Mühl, number 13, first pick of the second round, Brenna Maxwell.
Pretty cool.
Pretty elite shooter, and she'll have a chance to make that team as well.
Love it. All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. I'd like to talk to Nika Mühl at some point. Maybe we'll get an opportunity to do that. She's not available today, unfortunately, but I would
when
like
when we do, I'd like you to say what she said at the very end of her commentary.
Yeah.
I'd like you to memorize that.
Yeah. You'd like me to speak in Croatian so
sure
as
would.
To like not yes. only embarrass myself but kind of insult her. Yeah. No,
I don't think it'd be insulting.
I mean, I think it'd be a little insulting.
I think you'd say, Nika, I was listening to you with Holly
right.
Rowe and then just I love this.
Right.
And just rattled it off.
I don't know what she said though, so what if it was something that you know would be very insulting? Like I don't want to insult the poor person. That's not
true.
Right.
Yeah, not
doesn't
right.
seem appropriate. All right. Coming up next, I told everyone a secret before you came on, and I probably shouldn't share it. Maybe some people will find it embarrassing. I don't know, but I have a secret desire. I have a secret wish. And
like a fetish?
I'm just not, I wouldn't call it that necessarily, Brock.
Why?
That's probably
why?
Not the word I use.
Okay.
I don't think it's a, no, there's no fetishism here. What is wrong with you? But I will.
This is what happens when you're 48. Your filter gets less and less.
This is what happens when you've lived most of your life completely repressed. But I will
to.
Just tell you that I have a secret, and I will try to reveal it to you next on Brock and Salk.
This hour of the Brock and Salk Show is powered by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, a little scenario to come back. I was hoping maybe we'd have some of the Beatles. Listen, do you want to know a secret? I promise not to tell. But
I can't figure that out telepathically.
So no, I probably should have mentioned it
to
you.
To
I would have figured with your vast knowledge of music, especially from before you were born, that you would have just known
yes.
it anyway, Maura.
But I'm the music person.
That's how I always describe you to everybody. Brock, I do have a little bit of a secret.
Okay.
I do have a little something that it's just sort of a secret desire. I kind of want the Seahawks to take Jared Verse.
Oh, really?
It's a little secret. I don't want it to like be public, so don't tell anybody about it
right.
necessarily. But I know that publicly, I want them to take, you know, an offensive lineman like Faltano, a defensive lineman like Byron Murphy, right. And, you know, I'll throw quarterback into their own category. Because if they draft a quarterback in the first round, I'll be head over heels in love and be like, all right, that sounds great. Let's go. But secretly, I kind of want them to take Jared Verse.
Really?
Yeah, because you can't have enough edge rushers. And I heard Wyman and Bob talking about it yesterday. I played some of that sound at 6:30, and they were talking about Latu and maybe going there at that, you know, at 16 or maybe even later than that, and how much they like his pass rushing ability. And yeah, that's fine. I guess I've settled on Verse because he seems to be the one that would kind of be in and around the 16 spot. Mm-hmm. If it was Latu, I would certainly be excited about that as well. I guess I just. You got me a little afraid with the neck and the health stuff, but there's this little part of me, well, it's kind of growing part of me, I guess, that just says, like, I kind of want them to take Jared Verse.
Yeah, that'd be interesting because you have Uchenna Nwosu, who, by the way, will probably be a captain, and you run out the first week of OTAs as kind of one of the voices out there. You drafted Derek Hall in the second round. You drafted Boye Mafe in the second round.
Yeah.
You picked up the option on Daryl Taylor.
Just out of curiosity, with those four guys, what's their combined number of Pro Bowls?
Has Uchenna ever been to a Pro Bowl?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I'm not saying definitely not, but I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, he'd be the only one.
It's not like you've got, you know, 25 Pro Bowls there, bro.
No, but we talk about balance on a roster, right? We talk about balancing a roster out, and we saw some of the challenges at the safety position. And, right, you talk about just how much of your cap or how much of your investment and how much of your capital you can put in just one spot. And maybe edge is that spot. And Jared Verse is going to be one of the guys I profile next week. So I'm right there with you. I'm not diminishing the point, but it would feel like a little out of balance for the roster, right? For your needs, for your big people, for your line of scrimmage, for some still interior depth that, you know, it'd feel like a lot. But then again, you know, I'll get to this next week. He may be interchangeable enough within this scheme and this system. And oh, by the way, I didn't even mention Dre Jones. Also a guy, you know, that very similar inside and outside a little bit. So I don't know. Can you ever have too much of a good thing?
You can't. Not that good thing. You can have too much at safety. You can have too much at corner. You can have too much at running back. You can have too much at wide receiver. But you can't have too much at edge. You just can't. Yep. So I understand that the public stance needs to be that they need to take, you know, an offensive lineman or maybe a defensive lineman because those are huge marquee positions that they are not up to snuff at. And if you have the opportunity to get one of those, you should take it.
But difference making edge rushers?
There's nothing
right
like
there. If what you just said is like one in the league and what you really want.
No. Different. No, hold on. Difference making edge rusher is ahead of those things. But they have better edge players than they do in those other two positions.
Yeah.
So I can understand how it gets kind of bumped down the list of potential desires. But I just don't see that anyone on their team is being so great that they're not replaceable if you have an opportunity to get somebody who is great. Chenna was a Pro Bowl alternate.
Thank you.
Mafe has not been there. Daryl Hall had all kinds of problems as a rookie. He might not even be an NFL player. And Daryl Taylor, you said yourself he could get cut with no strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you may have some people there. You've obviously got names that you're familiar with. But that doesn't mean that any of those guys are so good that you couldn't use Jared Verse or Latu or any of these guys if they were to come in and be difference makers right away.
Who was this Josh Edwards fella that jumped on with Wyman and Bob yesterday? Because cut number 18, if you can fire that one away or for me, I think it kind of led to a little bit of what Wyman said and what you played earlier of expect the unexpected a little bit.
Yeah.
Just when you think John Schneider, you're going to put him in this little silo here.
Josh Edwards, draft guy with CBS. Here he is.
It's a team that is not afraid to think outside of the box and make a pick that is not widely accepted by the draft media. There was a period where those first round picks were not hitting and, you know, there was a little bit of skepticism about their process. And in the past couple of years, they've knocked it out of the park. I mean, 2 years ago was... I said, at the end of the draft, I said, I don't think they have any questionable picks from this draft. That was the Tariq Woolen draft where they took Charles Cross, they took Abe Lucas. I thought they hit it out of the park, and as we've now seen, they truly did. So just looking through their process, they're not somebody that is going to stick to the conventional rankings. They've got their own convictions, and at the end of the day, they're going to stick to their board and take the best player that they feel is available.
Do you feel like, Salk, if Chicago Radio called you or some of our sister stations across Bonneville Media called you and said, okay, we're gonna go through some draft stuff here with you, do you feel like you've got a pretty good pulse on what the Seahawks do in these drafts? And could you explain why the last 4 years they did not trade down? First 10 years they consistently did, and why the last 4 years they have not traded down but have made those top picks? What would be your hypothesis?
Well, I think I could explain the second part more than I could do the first. I don't know that I could tell you why the Seahawks draft who they draft. I think I could tell you that when they've had picks near the top of the draft, they've generally made those selections.
Right.
And for the last few
years.
You?
Yeah. Can I pause you right there? So whatever your next thought, just hold on to it. And I would absolutely co-sign on that, because I think we've heard enough intel after drafts where they say, yeah, there were only X number of first round guys.
Right.
There were only X number that we would put in this boat that we think truly that we grade to both our board and to our peers and to our roster that, yep, these are the bona fide difference makers. So when they've been in that territory to take Charles Cross or Devin Witherspoon or Russell Okung or Earl Tuck, right, they've taken those guys. But once you get beyond that threshold, the difference between the grade of player number 17 and player number 40 is minimal.
Right.
And then the value you create by trading down to get more picks at 40 through 95 is the way that they want to go about doing a lot of
business.
So
in those years, they've had picks where they see legitimate first-round talent. They've been, for the most part, in the top 15.
Yep.
And then the 1 year that they weren't, I think they tried to trade down, and they weren't able to. That was the year Jordan Love went right before them, and they weren't able to trade down. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted the pick.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that part's pretty easy to answer. I guess you've also just kind of answered your first question yourself by saying what they look for is people that they believe have the right value for the spot where they're picking.
And this is where it comes back to your little secret, not even a fetish, but just your little secret of what you really do want, which is Jared Verse, is this draft could be really, really unique with the number of quarterbacks drafted, the number of wide receivers drafted, mm-hmm. the number of offensive tackles drafted, need positions, marquee positions around the league that people get enamored with, the quarterback and wide receiver, three generational type receivers they're talking about, right? With one of them being right here in our backyard in Aroma Dunze, a couple generational offensive tackles. So do you know what that means when you start doing the math? And especially if there is a run on Bo Nix and Michael Penix, there's a possibility that an elite defender could be sitting there at number 16 for you, an elite guy. Not a, well, we kind of view this guy or judge this guy. No, maybe somebody on their board, Salk, that they grade out is the fifth best player in this draft, seventh best player, eighth best player in this draft, because they don't have a need for those quarterbacks or those tackles or those wide receivers. So for us on our board, this dude became the, you know, third or fourth best player, and we can get him at 16. Yeah. And Jared Verse may be that kind of guy. Dallas Turner probably goes ahead, maybe an edge guy out of Alabama that could be that kind of talent. So the defensive guys are going to get pushed down this board, which may give a new defensive-minded head coach a pretty rare market opportunity.
Mm. Dallas Turner's not going to go that deep, though, right? He will probably go before 16?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So really, then, if you were to
take,
it becomes a Latu versus Verse conversation. Yeah. I don't have that, but Josh Edwards, who you mentioned earlier, was on with Wyman and Bob. He talked about Latu versus Turner.
I think Dallas Turner has a higher ceiling at the position because he's still relatively young. He's developing at the position. Doesn't quite have the strength that Latu has. Latu is probably the most polished pass rusher in this draft class. And to me, I wouldn't be surprised if we were looking back in 5 years saying that he was the best pass rusher to come out of this class, because he's already the most prepared to make that transition to the next level. But from what I know about NFL teams, they tend to fall in love with the athletic traits and those qualities, and they take those players higher. I mean, that's why we saw Trevon Walker taken number one overall. He hadn't exactly shown a lot throughout his collegiate career, but he tested off the charts in Indianapolis, so now he's got to be the number one overall pick.
All right, so tell me just briefly here, Brock, mm-hmm. about these three mm-hmm. edge guys, Verse, mm-hmm. Turner, and Latu.
Yep.
How do you work through that Schneider?
Well, it's once again complicated, and my gut, I may be wrong on this, but my gut tells me that medical is really important to the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
that part of the reason that a Sony Michel or guys through the years that we look at and go, man, what a great fit. I just can't project him. Max Unger was a guy who I think they felt like and they projected from a body standpoint would not be able to hold on as long as he did. And thus they move him away in that Jimmy Graham trade. So I feel like there had been a time or two with, you know, maybe I'll bug John Schneider after draft and say, gosh, I really like this guy or I really like that guy. And I learned a little bit of intel that they have that nobody else has. And that's the big one. If Liatu Latu had no neck injury, had not medically retired, mm-hmm. had not had the University of Washington decommission him as a football player, Liatu Latu would be the first defensive end pass rusher picked, no question asked. 265 pounds. And as I said in my profile, he's a matrix. He would actually bust some of Dave Wyman's analysis when Wyman will say, what do you want these guys to do? Do you want them to be like the Matrix and bend, you know, and stop all of their movement and power and inertia and all of a sudden? Well, actually, he can do that. This guy just can bend and move in a way that at times defies gravity and certainly defies a 265-pound man that's not supposed to play at that level. So that is where this one becomes a little complicated because, I mean, why in the world would one program right here in our own market say, I'm sorry, you know, we can't have you play. We can't take that risk with what's going on in your neck, whether it's spinal stenosis, whether it's disc issue, whatever it is, like, sorry. And we've seen it, right? Cam Chancellor and mm-hmm. Cliff Averill and guys have shut it down here, have had to shut it down, medically retire. So that is the one that kind of throws a little further wrench into this conversation. And then I would say Verse is a little closer to Latu in that way. And then Turner is much younger, is longer, is dynamic, is twitchy, is all these things that may grow into like a Brian Burns elite kind of pass rusher.
Mm. Could Verse become elite?
It's pretty special, man. And his combine was a little bit like my guy yesterday where, you know, Cole Bishop ran a time and jumped at a level where you're like, hold on a second, because Jared's production off the charts. And then he went, you know, and looked at his running and jumping and running 4.5 at 260, like, ooh, okay, now I see why this guy, and he was a little bit longer, I think, than they anticipated him being at the combine. If the thought was maybe he's not traitsy enough, well, he checked most of those boxes. So
deceptive length.
Deceptive length.
Very yes. deceptive.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one thing when you have deceptive speed or deceptive strength, but deceptive length
right.
feels like something that maybe your eyes could have just kind of figured out while you were watching. All right, well, there you go, Brock. Now you know my secret.
Yep.
Try not to hold
not
it
surprised.
Over me.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, really?
Everybody has secrets.
Yeah. Well, that was mine. I just had one little secret.
Justin, you got right a secret out. Today? Maura, yeah. you got a secret?
Anybody else?
Maura kind of let her secret right out. When you came in that room, and she just took a shot right at you.
I know, that was
when
wrong.
When you talked about speed and Geno, and I'm going to address it right here in Blue 88, and maybe you're just a speed hater. Maybe you just don't respect those that can run, Saul.
Might
maybe
be.
Just don't think people are as fast as they are, and you'll find out.
Let's go to Blue 88.
This is Brock and Saul's Blue 88. We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
Brock, is Geno Smith actually the fastest Seahawk?
No cap. Facts.
Stop saying that.
Why?
Just cause.
That was the text that I got back.
I don't care.
From
Stop
a source very close
anyway.
To the situation. 21.67 miles per hour. 21.6. May not feel like much when you're driving 21 miles an hour in your car.
No.
I bet Justin on a scooter is like, okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good pace.
21.6 is going.
Yeah.
I know in Morocco on your monkey run, you were not doing 21.6 miles
an
hour anywhere.
That's 3 times our average speed, yeah.
You're not doing it.
Did I tell you I asked Justin's friend who I played golf with about their monkey run? And he was like, oh, it was miserable. I was like, yeah, of course it was miserable. Yep. You were on a teeny little bike in the mountains.
Do I think if Geno Smith, Tariq Woolen, by the way, who was number two at 21.53, Jackson Smith and Jigma, number three at 21, which, by the way, I like seeing that. I like seeing Jackson running at that kind of speed. Do I think if they got on the track with you and Tarana Bird next Thursday and ran, do I think that Geno would end any kind of race? 10, 20, 30, 50, 200 ahead of Woolen and Jackson Smith and Jigba? I don't.
Okay.
But I also don't think these numbers are particularly wrong. He's been committed to his craft the last few years.
Really?
He's got a little more in the tank than I think he lets on at times. And certainly we don't see that with huge explosive runs. It was, frankly, one of my biggest pet peeves. What I nitpicked maybe more this year than anything else was, go use your legs. You know, your first year as a starter, comeback player of the year, Pro Bowl player, took him to the playoffs over, what, 20 times, 20 occasions. You got third down conversions and use your legs to do that. We saw that number cut in half or more last season. So, yeah, maybe a little commitment here that, oh, by the way, Mike McDonald, I think he kind of liked that MVP out there in Baltimore.
Think
that
so?
Used his legs, right, to erase the mistakes of others around you, to move the chain, stay on the field. That's a pretty impressive number, no matter how you want to spin it.
All right, question number two. All right, so we played that sound a few minutes ago of Dave Wyman saying to just sort of expect the unexpected when it comes to the Seahawks in the draft.
I know you played it in the hour before I joined the show.
Because
Dave cut 15. Dave doesn't
it's
just...
It's a longer cut.
It's like a minute and a half.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah,
never
it's pretty
mind.
Long.
All right.
But just understand that that's what they're saying. No, yes. I can play you the beginning of it. Here's a little bit of it.
The more we talk to John, the more I have no idea what he's going to do.
No clue.
You know, but
no clue what he's going to do.
But I liked this guy's mock draft. And the reason why is I raved about Leatu Latu on Friday, talking about how I think he's the most talented edge rusher in this draft. And they have him going to the Seahawks.
Yeah. Yeah. Ahead of Jared Verse, who a lot of people had in mock drafts going to the Seahawks, and even ahead of where they're picking. So
they go on from there. But you get the idea. Brock, what would truly be outside the box?
I think a quarterback would be outside the box. I think Penix or Nix would be outside in the first round. That would be is hit me between the eyes, outside the box is just about anything. There's not going to be a tight end. There's not a defensive tackle, I don't think, in the six in that kind of range.
Really? Byron Murphy?
I wouldn't love that. I'd like to see him a little lower, but he could. I mean, if they took an offensive tackle, if one of these elite game-changing... Now, I love Fautanu, and you'll hear me rave about him next week.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that can slide in and play guard as well. If they took a true offensive tackle, because that offensive tackle slid and fell in this draft, because you know what? Teams always want pass rushers, Salk. They want their quarterbacks. They want, you know, and there's, you know, an opportunity for somebody unique to slide. An offensive tackle with Fant, with Cross, with Lucas would probably be another one of those way outside the box, but man, do not count anything out with John Schneider in this regime.
All right, question number three. Talk about multi-sport athletes. Justin was saying it would be great to have somebody who doesn't play baseball to threaten them this year. But Brock, how about a sport that maybe we don't focus on all the time?
How about men's volleyball? Not sanctioned in a lot of states in the country.
Okay.
Where in high school, you have a sanctioned volleyball sport.
Okay.
How about a, 6'5", 315-pound? He wasn't that size in high school, but I guarantee you he wasn't 215. He was probably 290.
Roma Dunes? No, that seems a little heavy.
No, it wasn't Roma Dunes. It wasn't one of your receivers.
No.
Wasn't your running back. No, wasn't Eddie O. No, wasn't any of those. How about an offensive tackle playing volleyball?
Yeah, this is Troy Fautanu.
It was awesome, man. That experience is something I'll never trade. I love the sport, but you know there was some college coaches reaching out about it, but my coaches told them that I was a football player through and through. I just did it for fun. It was just funny because I would go out there and not to be cocky, but like I would dominate out there. But like a lot of these guys took it serious. But for me, it was just another way to just get out there and be active. Honestly, I feel like it did help a lot, especially when it came to just like being explosive and moving laterally. And it's a team sport. So, I mean, just like football, anything, nothing works if one guy's off.
There have been guys, Salk, over the years. There's a lineman out of Wisconsin I liked a couple years ago. He started for the Rams, been a good player, not an elite player, but he was a high school quarterback, turned into a tight end, turned into an offensive tackle. I think his name was David Edwards. I don't know where that came from, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Okay.
So you have seen some of these offensive linemen over the years be former, a lot of them, former tight ends in high school. Huge, huge amount of them, former tight ends. I don't know, through my studies over the years, that I have seen too many high school volleyball players become elite offensive tackles.
Yeah.
But it does speak to his uniqueness. You all make fun of me, and rightfully so, with what I see with my eyes and my judgment level and everything else. But talk to scouts, talk to Daniel Jeremiah, talk to others, and they would say, the fact that dude plays with no knee braces, right? You see a lot of these teams, a lot of programs. Kansas State tapes up these guys' ankles like a cast, and every one of them has to wear these huge knee braces. Every single guy, like if you're going to be an O-lineman, this is a mandate at our school. Dude doesn't tape his ankles.
Okay.
Dude doesn't wear knee braces. Dude plays like a 315-pound Karch Kurai out there, and and it shows. And it's why I think these scouts and these NFL people have been so enamored with his athleticism, man. It's off the charts.
I'm excited about the Karch Kurai reference. That obviously is going to kind of make my day. Nice job on that one for sure. That is today's Blue 88. Every morning we do that at 7:45.
You ever play volleyball?
A little bit. A little challenging with my hand, but I can't. Yeah, I've played it a little bit. It's fun. Yeah.
Super fun.
It's a fun sport.
You know what's an exhausting sport?
I'm glad you got Karch Kurai in there, though.
Beach volleyball.
Oh, it's so tiring. Doing anything on the beach is exhausting. Like, you try to move and nothing happens.
We should do a show out in we talked about Seabrook last week, I think. There's a beach volleyball tournament that goes on out there every year. Brock, I would like to see you out there in some denim shorts. It's a beach volleyball tournament.
Reliving his favorite moment of Top Gun.
Yeah, you play on playing with the boys. I mean, you put that on. I mean, I'll get out there.
When I used to live in Playa del Rey, I mean, there was everyone around. That's what they did. They all played beach volleyball. And then you go down to, like, Manhattan Beach. That's like a mecca for beach volleyball. You go into a bar in Manhattan Beach, and like everyone in there, men, women, 6'6" and above. Oh, it was just crazy walking around. You're like,
now it's like spike ball, but I want to see beach volleyball, Brock. I think you need to do it.
That would be
this summer. Set it up.
That would be something. All right. Let's see. Coming up, we're gonna do a little buy or sell. We got Jeff Passan who's gonna join us. Brock's got another draft profile for us today. Another pretty intriguing player at a position they really don't need. So that's all coming up. Don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.